So I have a question for you. Do you tell your patients that they need to be having family meals? You know, the ones where they sit down and enjoy a well-balanced home-cooked meal together, all while sharing about their day and their highs and their lows. Now, be honest, how often do you have family meals? Probably not as often as we like, right? Getting a meal on the table after a long workday is so tough. Trust me, I get it. I struggle with this too.
Welcome back to the Exam Room Nutrition Podcast. I'm your host, Colleen Sloan. I'm a registered dietitian and pediatric PA. Each week, I'm giving you answers to common nutrition questions to help you become a more compassionate, confident clinician.
So in today's episode, we're going over tried and true strategies for quick, easy, and nutritious dinners. We're discussing how to make family meals more enjoyable and some simple pantry staples to keep on hand to make your meal prep run smoothly. We're going to talk a lot about expectations and what a, quote, family meal actually looks like. This discussion is going to be so helpful for pediatricians, family practice clinicians, and busy parents alike. Now, as a pediatric PA, I talk about family meals all the time. So I'm especially excited today because our guest is the go-to expert in creating stress-free family meals that bring everyone to the table. I'd love for you to meet Sarah. Sarah Schlichter is a registered dietitian, recipe developer, writer, and speaker. She owns and writes the popular blog Bucket List Tummy, which focuses on family-friendly recipes and taking away the stress around meals. I can't wait to get into this. Sarah, thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Colleen. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you today.
I love this topic, and I'm so excited to learn from you because I'm a busy mom myself, and getting family meals on the table, it can be so stressful and such a struggle. So I want to first start out by asking you, what are some ideas for busy families? Because I know your Instagram page is full of them. So just kind of start out with just helping us brainstorm these different ideas.
Sure. So I think one thing that's really helpful for us is kind of having like a repertoire that we rotate through. And that takes kind of some of the brainstorming effort away from moms where our mental energy is already drawn to so many other things, laundry, work, appointments, play dates, athletic events, things like that. So we kind of just go through the same things every few weeks. And I find that that helps, but I do try to keep it easy. I don't want to be in the kitchen for more than 30 minutes. I'm sure most of us don't have that kind of time, especially if you have younger ones like who are hungry or need to go to bed or just causing chaos in the house. So one pot meals are really good for that. We do a lot of chili and you can cater that to different preferences if you do meat or if you prefer plant-based, but we do a lot of chili because I find that it's a great way to get nutrients into kids. It's easy. It's one pot, whether you cook it in a crock pot, an Instant Pot, or even on the stove, it's ready pretty quickly. Or you can set it and go if you have a busy day at work. And it's usually full of protein, whether plant-based, meat protein, some vegetables that you can add in, and then some fun flavors. Like sometimes we'll do sweet potatoes or pumpkin to add some extra nutrients, but also give it a little bit sweeter twist. So we do that a lot. We do a lot of sheet pan meals. So those are some of my favorites to recommend to busy families because it really takes a lot of the time away from the prep and cleanup. You're only cleaning one pan. So that might look like some chicken breasts or pork chops on a sheet pan along with some vegetables. Usually we'll do like a bag of frozen broccoli or some sliced peppers and some sweet potatoes or potatoes, something that we can roast them all together. And you could even just pair it with like a side of microwavable rice or something if you wanted to. And then we do a lot of just kind of pick your own things, like a snack board dinner. So I've shown on Instagram before serving it in a muffin tin container, but you can even just serve it in. I saw recently someone serving some snacks in like an ice cube tray. But really the idea is that the kids are able to choose what they want to eat. So you provide the different nutritious options or you provide what's being served and then they have that autonomy to choose what they want, how much they want. So once I put the food on the table, my job is done. I've provided it and I usually try to provide an array of different things like fruits, vegetables, something crunchy, maybe like crackers or tortillas or garlic bread or naan bread or something. If we're doing a snack bar dinner and a protein option, that might look like pepperoni or beef sticks or cheese sticks or yogurt, anything like that. So I find that those meals are fun when we get into some of the stresses of eating with small children, but that is more of a fun one where they have a lot of fun choosing the different foods, different textures, different colors, things like that. And then just sometimes theme nights can be really helpful for families too. Again, taking that mental energy away, you know that every Friday is pizza night and every Tuesday is taco night and Wednesday is breakfast for dinner, which is really easy. And my kids seem to love that too. So we kind of take a lot of those ideas, maybe change them up slightly, but we're really rotating those every week or two to really try to take a lot of the mental energy and prep work away.
I love those ideas. And I actually used the muffin tin idea with my daughter when she was much younger, and she absolutely loved it because you hit the nail on the head. It's so fun for them, right? They feel like, you know, they're like getting their own little charcuterie board. They feel very independent, and it is the perfect practical explanation of the division of responsibilities, right? You said it beautifully. As the parent, you're deciding what you're offering, when you're offering it, where we're eating this. And the child gets to kind of pick and choose those different little items. And it doesn't have to always make sense, right? Like sometimes I'd put in like some cheese and a fruit and, oh, we had leftover green beans. So there's a few green beans in there, right? It doesn't have to be this like perfect meal and it doesn't have to make sense at all. But kids really love that. So I recommend that to my parents often as well too. All right. So let's move into some details on what are some pantry staples that we can suggest our parents keep on hand to make these nights much more easy and more practical.
Absolutely. So I'll usually start with canned food. So canned beans and legumes are so, so helpful. I would love to cook dry beans all the time, but canned beans are just so easy and so quick. And in this stage of life, that's what we rely on a lot for those chilies, for tacos. I'll just add it to rice bowls. My kids tend to love beans, so I can really add them to anything. And that's kind of a surefire way of getting that protein and fiber in. We do some canned seafood. I personally eat a lot of it, so I think it's a great pantry staple, and it's a great way to slowly introduce that to children. So we'll do some canned tuna or salmon occasionally. Canned vegetables are also another big one. We use those a lot in our chili or soups, but they're easy to just throw in lunch. We'll do some dried fruit. So whether we're talking about nuts or trail mix, I think that can be a really nutrient-dense snack option for kids. And again, it's something they could make on their own if you put the ingredients out and say, let's make a trail mix. What would you put in here? So giving them, again, that autonomy and that agency and the decision really makes them more likely to eat it. And then oats, pastas, sweet potatoes and potatoes, tortillas, breads, grains. We do quinoa, couscous, and farro pretty often in our house. So those are what come to mind for our main pantry staples. And, you know, the freezer is a whole different thing, but I kind of consider frozen vegetables as a pantry staple just because we always have them. And they're very cheap and budget friendly, and they're easy to really just microwave and add to any meal.
So let's linger here a little bit because you'll hear some gurus that have zero nutrition education and zero qualifications on social media that want to say that fresh fruits and vegetables are most nutritious, and shame on you if you ever give your kids and your family frozen or canned vegetables. How would you respond to that individual?
Yes, I think these messages are so harmful. And first of all, as moms, when we're getting those messages, we internalize it and we think we're doing something wrong, right? We're always trying to provide the best for our children, and we're working hard, and we're trying to spend the least amount at the grocery store to have more expendable money elsewhere, and groceries are going up. So this idea that we can only buy fresh food for the most nutritious option is very elitist, and it's really not accessible for many families. And it's not true, to your point. So we know that when vegetables or fruit are picked and they are flash frozen, they have their highest nutrition content in that aspect. So once they are put right in the freezer, they're not decaying over time, if you will. Whereas sometimes if you're at a grocery store, you don't know how long that fresh fruit or vegetable has been out on the shelf. It could have come from miles, hundreds of miles away across the country for all we know. So the nutrition content might not be as high as you would expect. So to counter that argument, I would say, first of all, we know that's not true. We have a lot of studies showing that the nutrition content of canned and frozen is just as equivalent, if not higher, than fresh. And it's just more accessible, more budget friendly, and it's going to lead to less food waste over time. So I really, really encourage families, and we use them all the time. So it's not just me preaching. I totally believe in this as well, that they are easy ingredients to use as canned or frozen, more so than fresh.
I completely agree with you. And thank you for noting that as moms and women, especially, we do internalize that feeling like I'm not providing the most nutritious food. It can be really, really challenging to hear those messages. All right. So as a pediatric PA, I hear all the time that family meals are awful and they're not enjoyable when you have an infant or just a wiggly 1 or 2 year old and then a toddler who is extremely selective and kind of throws a temper tantrum every time they bring them to the table, and mom and dad are then arguing. So it's just a really negative environment. So I would love for you to give us some tips and tricks on how do we make family meals more enjoyable.
Definitely. Oftentimes they are stressful. And sometimes that puts a blockage for us as parents knowing, well, my kids aren't going to eat this, or they're going to throw the food everywhere, or they're going to be fussy. You know, there's so many obstacles to it that sometimes that puts a blockage before it makes us not even want to attempt them. So first and foremost, I like to say, like, let's make our expectations realistic. When you have small children, they're not just going to sit in the same seat the whole dinner. They're not going to eat in a mature way and have wonderful, fluent conversations with us like we would expect from other adults. So I think we have to be really practical when we're talking about small children. Even, you know, as children are growing up, they're aging, their brain is maturing. So they're just not able to accomplish as much as we want them to as parents. So first off, I think we have to have realistic expectations. If we go in knowing it's going to be a little bit messy, they might not eat everything, that's okay. It's actually, when we're talking about family meals, it's really less about the nutrition and more about the overall experience anyway. Just having them watch us eat things as parents and model, having a conversation, showing an interest, increasing those family bonds and the family dynamic. So as parents, I do want to remind us, take some of the pressure off, because it's not just about what your kids are or are not eating, but it's just the whole act of sitting down and doing it together. But some things that I think really help us are, first of all, putting our phones away, because they're distracting for us, but also for children. So if I'm trying to film something or take a picture of a recipe, which sometimes I'll try to do to share with followers, if I have a tip, my 5-year-old will say, all right, mom, no phone time. You got to put it away. And I respect her for calling me out like that, because I'm like, you're right. Let's sit down. We need to eat now without any external distractions. One thing that I really try to have them do, and this is going to be dependent on the ages of your children, but as they get older, they can take on more responsibilities. I'll have my 5-year-old and sometimes my 3-year-old help set the table. That might just look like putting napkins or paper towels out, putting the plates out, pouring water, just giving them those responsibilities. They're already more invested in this experience because they're playing a role in it. So whatever that might look like, if you have older kids, it might mean, you know, serving some food on the plate or putting some butter on bread or bringing a bowl of food to the table, you know, anything like that. It can be really, really helpful to, first of all, give them responsibility, but also let them play a role in the meal. With that, if there's any preparation that they can do before is also very helpful. So that could even start with picking out the groceries or talking to your children and saying, we could have this or this for dinner, which sounds good. Or what would you prefer? Would you prefer pasta with zucchini, or would you prefer chicken with rice and green beans? So you're giving them that option. They know what to expect. It's not really a surprise come dinner time. So I do find that that can have a little bit less resistance with children. Another fun thing that I have always done, and I've called it a communal bowl, but it's really just a bowl that I place in the middle of the table, and I don't always bring attention to it. Sometimes I'll put it down before we even start eating. But it's really, to your point before, some leftovers from previous meals, or it's some fresh vegetables that I have cut up. If I have the time, I might have my 5-year-old help me cut the peppers or broccoli into little baby broccoli florets. We'll have some ranch or hummus. I might have some crackers. I might have some chips and salsa. It really just depends. But the goal of this bowl is, if they eat absolutely nothing on their plate, I know that there's some safe foods on the table that they'll eat that do provide some nutrition. Now, ideally, it's not a whole meal and they're not just eating from the communal bowl, but it's there. They can grab it. They can add to their plate with the food that's there. There's usually fruits, vegetables, and some color options there. So I feel good about that. And then with younger children, I also find that just making it fun in any way you can. Now, I know at the end of the day, as parents, we're spent. We don't really have the mental energy. We don't always want to play make pretend or make anything extravagant. But even if I have my girls go put on a dress up, I'm serving dinner for Elsa and Anna tonight, and this is what they're eating. Are they ready? And they get really excited and go put on their dress up clothes and come down. And it's funny for me as a parent, but it does make it more enjoyable because they're so cute and they're here and this is a big deal for them and they're showing up for this dinner. So again, if they eat nothing, it's more about the experience. It's more about the memories and whatever other family things work for you. If you're a family who does a blessing or says grace, I think that can be great. Even just going around the table and asking a child what they're thankful for or what was something positive or good that happened at school or at home or something that they'll remember. So for us, those are just some ideas that it keeps me invested in the meal and reminds me it's not just about the nutrition on their plate, but it's this overall experience that I do want them to have positive memories growing up. I eventually want them to start some of those traditions with their future generations. So I do try to stay in the moment and remember the big picture when it comes to that kind of stuff.
I love those suggestions, especially the dress up, because boys can do this too, Spider-Man, Batman, whatever they're into. And, you know, we have buckets full of old costumes or just t-shirts that they've gotten along the way. And I think that is so awesome. And again, because you're teaching them how to have the experience with dining, you think of ourselves as adults. I love getting dressed up and going out to dinner on a date. You know, I'm dressed in scrubs every day with my hair up. So it's really nice to put on something nice and go to a meal. And so that's kind of a new skill that they're learning of like, oh, this is something special and I get to enjoy it and be excited about participating in that. As you were talking, I was thinking about my next question and it's, what do we do for the child who won't even sit at the table or come to the table at all? And honestly, I think that's a great technique is say, hey, go throw on your Elsa dress, you know, and see if that works. But sticking to this question, what do we do for the wiggly child who is like up and down, out of the table, out of the chair? You know, they're too old for high chairs. We can't strap them in because I know that gets annoying as an adult and stressful, right? For the parent, because you're like, oh my gosh, just please sit down. I want to sit down for 5 minutes. Right. So besides dress up, what are some ways that we can get kids to sit at the table?
Yeah, this is a great follow-up question. And to your point, what you just mentioned, I did want to just add something else that it is about the experience. And sometimes when we're providing so much pressure, trying to make them sit still or finish the food on their plate, in their mind, that is becoming a negative experience for them. So we want to try to stay away from that. So that's where we find that if we make it fun, at least they start to associate a family meal with a more pleasurable experience. So again, hopefully that leads to them eating. But, you know, if in the beginning we take baby steps and it's, okay, let's try to sit down for 5 minutes. I think I saw somewhere, it was one of the big parenting accounts on social media, say that, again, going back to realistic expectations, like for every age that they are, you can expect them to sit for 2 minutes longer, for example. So like a 3 or a 4 year old, they're not going to sit for 10 or 15 minutes. It's probably going to be like 5 to 7 minutes. And if you have like a timer with the sand, if you have something visual, that can be helpful for them to equivalate what that looks like, because they don't know what 5 or 10 minutes is like. But if they have something that they can go by, that can be really helpful. I also find that, again, sometimes taking the pressure off and having like coloring books and markers on the table. Now, everyone's family dynamic is going to be different. Some families might not want any extra distractions or anything. But for us, when I'm trying not to pressure and put so much emphasis on the food on the plate, again, I want them to just be with us and talk. Sometimes having a distraction like that is helpful. And then again, I would, if we can involve them beforehand. So I think a lot of this resistance starts where maybe they're playing or they just got home from school or, you know, there's a lot going on and we're trying to make this really strong transition from what they're doing to sitting at the table and eating the food in front of them where they've had no agency in the decision at all. So I think if we can ease that transition a bit, and that might look like trying to involve them in the prep work or asking your son, hey, do you mind just putting these cups on the table? Or mommy or daddy are going to have some water. Do you mind putting some ice in this cup? Or where's the baby forks? Could you go put that at the table? So trying to involve them could help. And this is going to be a little bit specific, or it'll change a little bit depending on the child, but if we can involve them in some way. And then the other technique that comes to mind is just if they want to sit at a separate table for the time being, maybe we can use that as a stepping stone. So maybe you have a little kid's table with little chairs, because maybe, like you said, they're too big for a high chair, but they're squirmy at the table. Maybe it's too overwhelming. So if we can take a stepping stone, and if we don't want to use a booster seat, maybe we have a little table, put their meal there. They're still very close to us, maybe right next to us. We can still talk, or maybe give them something to work on while we're eating. So it's just a more pleasurable, less chaotic experience overall.
Great tips. Now, some pushback that I get as a PA is they'll say, well, what do I do if they didn't eat anything and they want to get up? You know, it's been, let's say, 4 or 5 minutes. They didn't touch a meal and they want to go. What should we say to the parents? Is that okay? Should we have a minimum of you have to take 2 or 3 bites? Or what is the healthiest strategy to use regarding this issue?
Yeah, it's a tough question, because, again, I think it might change based on the family. So some of this is like knowing your children and gauging their hunger, because their hunger is not always in tune with ours, and their stomachs are really small. So sometimes we're serving these large amounts of food that's really intimidating for them, and they really only need a couple bites to get what they need. So children are intuitive. We do have to remember that. However, as they age, they can get a little tricky, and maybe they'll say they're not hungry for dinner, and then right before bed, it's like, well, now I'm hungry, or I want a snack. We've been through that. We go through that weekly. So I think that's a normal part of growing up and learning. Now, for those kind of situations, I would tell parents, I think some boundaries are helpful, and determining what those boundaries look like in your house is just something you want to be consistent with. So whether it's, okay, if you're not hungry now, just sit at the table and color, because we're still eating and we have to stay seated until everyone's done eating. Or it might look like, okay, letting them go do their thing so you can enjoy your dinner, and then trying again in 5 minutes. It's definitely not black and white, because all kids are going to be different and going through different developmental phases and things like that. But I do think finding some boundaries that work for your family, and whether that might be they eat a smaller dinner and a bigger lunch. Most kids just front load their calories anyway. So when it becomes later in the day, they're already getting tired, their appetite's not as high. So we can plan accordingly. As parents, maybe we're serving bigger snacks or more nutrient-dense options at breakfast and lunch, knowing that dinner during different growth periods or different phases is just going to look a little bit different. So I think it goes back to having, you know, relaxing our expectations and being practical with our children and figuring out what sort of boundaries work to make it more enjoyable for you too, because it's about the kids, but it's also about the parents. We don't want to be stressed out this whole time, because that's going to take away our initiative to even want to sit down as a family.
I love this conversation so much, because it really sounds like we're shifting the mindset around what a family meal is, right? You know, like we could see the Pinterest family and they're eating 6-course meal and the children are all sitting quietly and perfectly. But like you've been saying, and you keep going back to this time and time again, and I think it's so important as clinicians that we relay this to our patients, is to just change your expectations a little bit. And that can kind of ebb and flow with each week, with your schedule, with your mental capacity. I know there's some weeks where I'm just like, I have nothing left to give. We're getting rotisserie chicken and that's it. Like, it's literally just chicken tonight because that's all I can handle. But it's a more enjoyable meal for everybody, because I'm not stressing out in the kitchen, you know, trying to figure out a dinner. We're all just sitting around laughing about our day. And so I think we can teach our patients to shift their mindset and just to have a little grace on themselves and on their kids. It can make the journey of feeding our kids so much more enjoyable. So this has been so helpful. So any last comments that you wanted to add to what we've discussed today?
Yeah, I was just going to echo what you said, to just think about family meals differently. One thing that even I was learning more about this year is that, you know, family meals could be meals with neighbors. It could be a picnic outside. It could be a walking meal where you're eating walking with people. It could be, extended family. It could be colleagues. You know, it doesn't just have to be that nuclear family sitting at a table for the entire meal. It maybe it's snacking while you're watching a movie together. So there are so many different ways that a family meal could be correct and look for every different family. So to your point, that Pinterest worthy expectation with everyone happy and smiling, it's just not really realistic for many families. So expanding upon that and whatever works for you and your family is great. It's more so the act of just getting together and less about what they eat, but more about the experience.
I agree with you. And I love changing locations. So like what you had just said, like go outside and have a picnic or take a walk and eat. That used to be my daughter's best way that she would eat is when we threw a picnic blanket outside and I just would have a muffin tin of stuff. So I kind of combined the snack tray with a different location. The other thing that she loved was to eat under the table. It was like so fun and, you know, you're kind of like breaking the rules a little bit. So I think that's another great strategy for kids who maybe won't come to the table is get rid of the table and just go eat somewhere else and make it more enjoyable. But I think as parents, we forget to have fun, right? Because we're so stuffy and stressed with life that we forget that kids have fun with everything and that's included in food. So we really shouldn't rob them of that joy and take that pleasure away from them, but we should really add to it and just tap into that. So I think having fun with family meals is the takeaway point and just lowering expectations and just creating that awesome experience for our kids and for our families. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your expertise. I really enjoyed this conversation and I would love for you to share where people can find you, hang out with you, and just learn more from you.
Sure. Yeah. So my website is bucketlisttummy.com and I have tons of family meal ideas, tons of recipes from little eaters, baby led weaning up to adults, but most of them are 20 to 30 minutes max because again, we don't want to spend too much time in the kitchen when we have all of these other things to do. And I'm on social media with the same handle, bucketlisttummy. So yeah, thank you for giving me this platform and having this conversation with me.
Thank you so much for being with us. I can't wait to have you back on. All right, guys, now it's time for my nutrition notes. Before we close, I have a favor to ask you. If you have a friend or a colleague who struggles with finding the words to say around nutrition or weight, could you please share this episode with them? Grab the link and shoot them a text. I'd love for them to listen as well. My goal is to help as many clinicians as possible realize that nutrition matters, and it is possible to educate our patients toward a healthy lifestyle despite all the barriers that we face. I absolutely loved my conversation with Sarah because I'm extremely passionate about family meals, and I love the tips that Sarah had shared, so I wanted to share a few others that have worked for me personally in the past. And the first one is the idea of giving each child a job. And you can do this from a very young age. Why I love the idea of jobs is because it's another exposure that the child is having towards that food, especially if you've got a selective eater on your hands, because now they're having to either touch the food, talk about the food, look at the food, have the food near them with zero pressure to actually put that food in their mouth and eat it. So for the very young kiddos, I love having them help in the kitchen washing the fruits or the vegetables. It's a very easy thing to do. Either get them a colander or just let them splash in the sink. They love it. It's fun. They love water. And so just let them pre-wash the veggies for you. For older kids, they make kid-friendly and kid-safe cutting utensils and scissors. So I like having the older kids, and that could be between 5 and 9, cut up the fruits and vegetables for the meal. So like broccoli is a great example. You can get them some scissors and they can just cut the broccoli from the head into different florets. If you have lettuce, like romaine lettuce, you can have them easily just break the lettuce apart and they can just kind of tear it apart with their hands. Once the food is cut, I also like to have the older kids lay out the different veggies on the baking sheet and allowing them to sprinkle the seasonings on it. And then like we had talked about, while the food is baking, you can have them set the table, choose the placemats, choose the napkins, choose where everyone is sitting. They can even create place markers so they can, you know, with 3x5 cards, you could just fold it and they can write the family member's name and they can tell where everyone is sitting for that night. And you can kind of switch it off like, hey, Monday night, Susie's going to pick where everyone sits and Tuesday night, Johnny is going to pick. So they each have kind of their fun job that they get to be really excited about. The last way that I really love to make food fun for kids is to name a certain dish after them. They love this because it's ownership. and they feel so proud of it, especially if they helped in the preparation of it and it's their dish. So for example, if you make tater tots and your child helped you pour them from the frozen bag onto the baking sheet, you could call those Tyler's Tots. And they're going to be super proud of that. Or if you have a salad that your one child really, really likes, and maybe they poured the dressing over it and they tossed the salad for you, it could be Susie's salad. But naming a certain dish or a dinner for one child is so, so fun. So I hope today's content was really valuable for you and that you learned some tips that you can suggest to your patients and parents to help them have more stress-free, fun family meals. I just wanted to express my heartfelt gratitude for you for choosing to hang out with me. I know you have so many options in the podcast world, and I really am so thankful that you choose to listen in and to learn from me. If you want to connect with me, you can find me on Instagram at examroomnutrition. Well, that's it for today. So as always, let's continue to make our patients healthier, one exam room at a time. I'll see you next time.